Welcome to BrainCore, the podcast that introduces you to new psychology and neuroscience research. I'm Tolu Feromika, and I'm joined by my co-host, Christina Valkanis. So for most university students, this may be the beginning of summer or summer courses, but I do hope that exams went well for all of you, and we are back in the groove of things here at BrainCore.
Back when Tolu and I had Dr. Sawa Senzaki on the podcast, she talked about weird populations and the lack of cultural, ethnic, and racial diversity in research, or the overall lack of global collaboration. At that point, Tolu and I decided that BrainCore should go more global than it already has, and what better way to do so than to start with our home countries?
Exactly. So we decided to dedicate this month of May to Greece, which is where Christina is from, and Nigeria, which is where I am from. With that said, Christina, who do we have on today?
Today, we are joined by Dr. Nikos Takis. Dr. Takis is a trained clinical psychologist. He is also certified in teaching and practicing psychodrama and founded Endochora, which is the Institute of Psychodrama in Greece. On top of that, he is currently the president of the Federation of European Psychodrama Training Associations, which serves as an umbrella organization for associations across Europe and the Mediterranean. They streamline psychodrama training, establish minimal training standards and ethical guidelines, while promoting collaboration and research in the field. Welcome to the show, Dr. Takis. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very, very happy and honored to be here with you.
Thanks. That's great to hear. First things first, our term of the episode today, or TOTE, is psychodrama. So what is psychodrama and how did you find out about psychodrama?
Psychodrama is a form of group psychotherapy, which has been invented by Jacob Levi Moreno back in the early 20s. Jacob Levi Moreno was a psychiatrist. He was also a social activist. He was also an actor and a theatrical director. Having said that, he was very much interested in the transition of the old Europe after the end of the First World War to a new condition in which the majority of European traditional empires, like the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Ottoman Empire had collapsed at the time. So there was a new social reality gradually emerging. And he wanted to use the knowledge of psychiatry and social studies and social sciences like sociology and social anthropology that was doing its first steps at the time in order to heal, in many quotes, of course, the modern societies. And he believed very much in the positive potential of each one of us, heavily influenced by humanistic philosophy and the teachings of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the philosopher of the French Revolution, and also Martin Buber. So he wanted to come up with a way in which he could first study the social issues, problems, and concerns, and invent a way to repair them. This is how the idea of sociodrama first appeared, which was an attempt to explore the nature and the identity of the Austrian nation after the end of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and the defeat of Austria in the First World War, in which he had invited people on a theatrical stage on April 1st of 1921 to sit on a throne and act as if they are the emperor or the prime minister of Austria, and have interaction with other people that would play similar roles, like, for example, the King of Great Britain or the Kaiser of Germany at the time, so as to find, you know, resourceful and creative solutions out of the social upheaval of the time. That was the first form of Moreno's invention, which was called not psychodrama, sociodrama, because the object was the change and, like I said before, the reformation, in a way, of the whole society in the collectivity. Then he created a theatrical group which was based on improvisation. It was called Théâtre de l'Impromptu in French. Theater, I think it means the theater of improvisation, of the unpredicted, the theater of the unpredicted. And what was happening there was that he had a group of actors and spectators were coming. They were narrating a story or they were sharing something they've read in the newspaper. And the group of actors was improvising on what they have just heard from the spectator. Somehow the spectator was giving the script, was giving the story, the narrative, which was acted out on the stage. This became much more popular as an approach, resulting in having a very successful group of not only actors, also musicians that were playing, they were improvising after they heard the narrative, painters that they were creating spontaneously scenery, and this became very, very popular. And there was there the first case that was successfully treated with psychodrama, which was the case of Barbara. If you want, we can elaborate, but I think that it will be too much to expand. What is important to note is that Moreno noted that there were some therapeutic, psychotherapeutic effects from people participating in this whole process. Then, after migrating to the States in 1926, he had worked in an institution for female delinquent adolescents. And there, he had applied his ideas to this more clinical population than, you know, the spectators of the theater in Vienna. And he came up with even more interesting remarks about the nature of the group dynamics, which is a very important concept in the broader area of group psychotherapy. And he founded officially psychodrama as a distinct psychotherapeutic approach. And he had also founded a training center in the suburbs of New York, the Beacon was the name, where he was studying with his colleagues and pupils psychodrama, and he was also training new generations of mental health practitioners in this method. So this is how psychodrama was born. And a few words about its effect and its the method in general. You know, in psychodrama, all important issues and concerns and ideas and troubles, memories, dreams, fantasies, apart from being narrated, they are also reenacted on the stage, which is very helpful for many people that do not have developed adequately and sufficiently the symbolic thinking, as we call it, and the ability to symbolize in words what they have in mind. Yes, this is why it's very helpful for people with more severe psychopathology. It works excellently with psychotic patients, with children, with mental retardation and problems and deficits in this symbolization process that I have just described. But also for other people who are very defensive and very reluctant in, you know, delving into their psychic lives.
Yeah, that's a good introduction. I want to ask, so what is a typical psychodrama session like?
There are three parts in the session. But before going to the session, Tolu, I would like to say a few words about the group in general, that we should not ever forget that we need to take into account the basic principles of group work and group psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. which means that there needs to be a specific, you know, context and knowledge and awareness of the group processes and group dynamics, like I said before. And now when it comes to psychodrama, we need to have some extra awareness and also training, because we are talking about a way of work in which we emphasize a lot, first of all, the body, because the body is very much present. We do not just talk, we play, we use our bodies very actively in the process. Mm-hmm. And also, we need to be very aware of the fact that, you know, when you don't just talk about things, but when you play them out theatrically, you bypass defense mechanisms, which are there for a reason. You don't have to rush into things. You need to respect very, very much the pace, the hesitations, the inhibitions of people, because if you just force them out on the stage, this might be felt very, very aggressively. It might be felt like a violation, and we don't want that. So having said that, we need the first period of the group to somehow familiarize and acquaint the members with the specificities of this approach. And having done so, I'm coming now to your question about the typical structure of the session. There is firstly the warm-up phase, which means that people, as they come in the group, they are very much influenced by the external reality, and we need to do some actions in order to bring them within the reality of the group. There are some specific techniques, exercises and activities that many psychodramatists can work, but as the group gets more mature, just by entering and starting to discuss with the others, you enter in this new reality of the group. And then, after having discussed how people attend the session today, we start somehow focusing on some specific issues. For example, there is a female client coming and saying that she just had a fight with her husband. Everyone talks about how they are coming in the group in a specific session, but you see that there is a special concern about this female member. And then the group leader, the psychodramatist, might take the initiative and suggesting to this member to focus on this specific topic, and I will tell you what that means, or he or she can ask the group, what is the topic that you would like us to work on today? Both are valid, and both are ways that we see often being used. In general, the more you see a person agitated, overwhelmed, and anxious, the more easy it is for you to suggest to this member to become the protagonist, as we call it, of the session. And then we pass to the second phase, of the session, which is the enactment phase, in which, through the various techniques and practical tools of psychodrama, we choose a way of reenactment of what has been narrated by this specific patient, and then we are processing the issue with the theatrical technique of psychodrama. For example, just to familiarize you with the process, we ask from the client to say a few more words on what has happened and how did that make her feel, but not too much, because we don't want things to be said, we want them to be played out, like I said before. And after her having talked a bit, we say, okay, choose someone to be yourself. And then she chooses a person from the group, which we called the auxiliary ego, people who are participating in the drama, in the scene, in the enactment, are called the auxiliaries or auxiliary egos. Then we ask the client to play the scene of the fight. But once again, it's not about just playing what has happened. We start from there, and then as we have the main dialogues being repeated, then we ask her to stop, and we tell her, okay, now that you are into this scene again, how do you feel? What crosses your mind? And especially, how do you feel? Because we are very much interested in this bodily sensation and emotional reactions. And she might say something like, I am very angry, I feel anger, but I feel also that I love this person very much. But I'm also very frightened. So we have three feelings, anger, fear, love. And we might tell her something like, choose someone from the group to be love, someone else who will be fear, someone else who will be anger. And then, after having brought those people on the stage, and here I'm opening a parenthesis, everybody has the right to decline. No one has to play. Only if they want, they participate. Okay. I'm closing the parenthesis. And we ask her first to enter in the role of her anger, her fear, her love. And she speaks, she says, she acts through being in this feeling. And the auxiliary will repeat exactly what she has done being the anger. Okay? And this is... And then we might proceed to something more than that. We might go, for example, to a third scene, which is the first moment in her life that she started feeling the love, the fear, or the anger. This is the famous statu nascendi in Latin. It means the birth state of its feeling and its condition. And you see that in psychodrama, there is no time, there is no sex, there is no age, there is no gender. Anything can happen. Anything can come on the psychodrama stage. This is why the condition of playing out scenes on the stage, we call it the surplus, excuse my accent, reality. The surplus reality. Which means that there is a transcendental level of experience in which psychodrama is taking place. Exactly like the dream. The dream is real somehow. It is happening inside us. But in a very personal, subjective, meta level of reality. Then we finish the second phase and we go to the third phase, which is the sharing phase. We return to the group. We sit again in the group's circle. And then people start to share feelings, not ideas, not thoughts like, you know, intellectual stuff. More, they share how they have experienced the thing that has happened and what of theirs, of their histories and their pasts and their lives has been reignited by participating as an auxiliary or just by viewing, by watching the drama played out on the stage. This is the typical structure of the session.
So you mentioned the importance of understanding the group dynamic. And
yes.
In your case study about Lambros, you mentioned that you do have individual psychotherapy sessions with some of the patients as well. Yes. So as a clinical psychologist, what are some of the benefits of psychodrama compared to other methods? And when might you decide to implement it in your practice? And first, since you're a clinical psychologist, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sorry, Christina, please finish.
Oh, I was just going to also ask, since you're a clinical psychologist, how have you combined psychodrama with psychotherapy in the past?
Yes, first of all, apart from clinical psychologist, I am trained in psychoanalysis. I'm practically, you know, my field is mainly psychoanalysis, psychodrama also, and above all, the combination. What I'm doing is psychoanalytic psychodrama, mainly. Mm-hmm. And you know, having worked many years with drug addicts, where we have the problem that I have described before, this lack of the symbolization processes I have described, I saw that those people were very, very, very much helped by the individual sessions because they felt that they had a person they could lean on. This is the famous anaclitic function in psychotherapy, when you have someone you can lean on. But I also felt that they would benefit very much from participating in a group. And to be honest with you, I don't think that successful treatment of addictions can take place without group participation, somehow, some kind of group process. And especially psychodrama has worked a lot because those people were not that able, due to the fact that they have been many years in substance and drug and alcohol abuse. This has interfered with their, you know, with the development of their cognitive skills and other psychological and personality characteristics and correlates. So I found it very, very helpful. And I started also using psychodrama in my private practice. And I always feel that, you know, it's so rewarding. It's first of all, it's such an interesting experience. You see things that you would have never predicted that will happen. That's the nice thing about psychodrama. It goes quickly to great depths, and it takes you to another reality, like to this surplus reality. And it's a very interesting and unprecedented experience. And this is one more reason why having group leaders and psychodramatists trained and supervised very, very well and for many years, it's very important. Because, you know, there are things taking place and forces liberated that are not very easy always to be contained and controlled. The people need a lot of experience. And this is why I always suggest and that I recommend to my supervisees and to my students in the American College of Greece to run groups, psychodrama groups, if they will ever do in their career, in pairs, not alone. Because it's a multi-layered and multi-leveled process that when you are alone, I don't think that you have the time and the ability to watch them all. Some things might slip your attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine it takes a lot of focus to lead a psychodrama session like that. But today, we'd like to put the spotlight on your case study from 2018. So could you give us a brief summary of who Lambros is?
Lambros was a young adult that has been using drugs since an early age. But he had a very traumatic history. But he had managed to, despite the fact that he was a user, to continue working and studying. And he was very traumatized from a very problematic family background. He was very dedicated and very determined to change his life. And he managed to do so through both individual psychotherapy and also participating in group psychotherapy and psychodrama.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned trauma, because I volunteer at a shelter that deals with individuals struggling with various mental health and addiction issues. And one of my supervisors at the shelter said to me, Christina, trauma is the gateway drug, whether it's something that occurs when they're in the womb or beyond. What's leading to these people being where they're at today is trauma. In your experience, do you find that that is the truth? Do you find that
Absolutely. And I would say one more thing, Christina. Trauma freezes time, freezes psychic development. In psychoanalysis, we say that the psychoanalytic definition of trauma is that we're talking about an experience that cannot be processed by the ego, cannot be repressed, which means that somehow stays always in the boundaries between the conscious and the unconscious and becomes something like a lens, something like a prism that distills all experiences. This is why we see, and Freud has written the excellent paper Beyond the Pleasure Principle, where he introduces the concept of the death drive. And he says that we see that traumatic cases tend to be repeated. For example, in the case of abused women, we see very often breaking up with an abusive partner and entering in another abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And why this is happening? Because primarily we unconsciously want to resolve trauma. The problem is that we do not have the means to do so. So instead of resolving it, we tend to repeat it again and again and again. This is the famous concept of repetition compulsion. So I would strongly agree with what you said, Christine.
Yeah, and it seems like what you said, where people are burying this trauma right between their conscious and unconscious. In Lambros' case, it seemed that incorporating myth into the therapy actually helped him bring this turmoil to surface.
Thank you very much for this comment. In the case of Lambros, that was exactly the innovation, if you want, or the creative part, that we used mythology as a means, as a vehicle, I would say, to approach what was happening to him. And you know, Greek mythology is so rich in terms of symbols, in terms of let's call it meanings. For example, the whole psychoanalytic movement was based on the myth of Oedipus, as I imagine you already know. The Oedipal complex and all that. Or the myth of Narcissus. Narcissism is practically a direct reference to ancient Greek mythology. You know the myth of Narcissus? That he was so much in love with himself that he finally starved to death because he neglected eating. You know that?
I know that myth.
So in the case of Lambros, we used the myth of Prometheus bound. Prometheus that somehow had offered himself, sacrificed himself to save the mankind. This was exactly what was happening in the case of Lambros for me. He sacrificed himself in order to save the family. And this is a common theme, a common, let's call it, scenario that we see in drug addicts' families. Usually they are, and this is something that group therapy, systemic therapy, not group, sorry, family therapy has shown and described very beautifully, that very often the drug addict is the weakest person that somehow sacrifices himself in order to keep the family together. And this was the case of Lambros, and we approached it through the myth of Prometheus.
So, I know in the case of Lambros, like, there were other people involved, and you did mention the importance of a group dynamic. Is it ever possible to use psychodrama therapy on an individual basis, like one-on-one?
Thank you very much for this question. Yes, it is possible. It's called individual psychodrama or monodrama. And it's also very interesting and also very helpful. You need to predict more time than the usual session. The usual session time, which is 45 to 50 minutes, it takes 1 hour and 15 minutes up to 1 hour and a half, because there is a process there that you need to warm up to do all the three stages that I talked about before. We also apply it in the individual psychodrama session, and it takes longer, but it can be also very, very effective. And there is excellent also bibliography on that.
That's great to know.
How do you find that the role play on stage helps people develop roles that will help them in their day-to-day life outside of the psychodrama setting?
You know, Jacob Levi Moreno, the founder of psychodrama, said that psychodrama is a rehearsal for life within the safety and the containment of the psychodrama group. you can practice literally ways of new reactions to the stimuli of the environment. You practice that in the group, you consolidate it in the repertoire of your roles by applying it within the group setting, and then you transfer the knowledge outside. And it works very much.
Mm-hmm. And I know for Lambros, the myth of Prometheus worked very well for him. But in terms of other cases, when you're in charge of a session, how do you come up with a type of role plays that will be useful for an individual?
This depends very much on the case. We don't usually have predetermined roles. Psychodrama is very much based on spontaneity and creativity. This is the difference between psychodrama and drama therapy, for example, but I don't want to expand more on that now.
Mm-hmm. But
we are creating the roles, brick by brick. We are constructing. And to be more specific and exact, we co-construct. Because we detect the problem is, we discuss about the problem, and we start to create a new role with all the elements that the person and the group, the person with the help of the group, to be more exact, believe that will be more effective in facing and responding successfully to the challenges of the environment. And that is very important. We do not just, you know, impose roles and solutions. We discover them all together.
Mm-hmm. So there's a big aspect of collaboration and flexibility.
Yes, and co-construction, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. I want to say that before Christina sent me the case study to read, I'd never actually heard of psychodrama before, but it sounds like it can be such a useful approach to the struggles that people deal with, such as substance abuse. But I want to ask, where do you see psychodrama therapy in the future? Do you think it'll be widely implemented in therapy sessions?
It is already told very widely implemented, and it's not only in therapeutic fields. It's in all domains of human interaction. It has been used very much, for example, in conflict resolution within big associations and organizations and companies, for team building, conflict resolution, for the training of the staff in order to undertake a new role, or when they are promoted, people might be trained through psychodrama and role plays on how to become a good manager, for example. It's very, very important. It can be also used in education, in special education, with autistic children, for example, or children with mental retardation. It can be very helpful whenever we have human relations. Moreno thought of psychodrama not as psychotherapy of individuals, but as a method for the improvement and the amelioration of relations. That is very, very important.
I think that that's definitely true, what you said about role plays too and training. For any job, usually you start off by just acting things out. So I just want to take the time to thank you for all your information today. Dr. Takis, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yes, I want to echo that and say thank you so much for coming on and discussing the case study with us. I think it was really fascinating. And I can speak for myself and perhaps some listeners as well and say that we've definitely learned something new, especially the history of how psychodrama came about. But to round off, if you have any questions or comments about this episode, let us know. Have you heard of psychodrama before? Did anything surprise you about the history? I will put the article we talked about in the bio today, and I highly suggest reading it because it goes in depth on Lambros and his substance abuse journey and how psychodrama helped with that. So if you'd also like to send some comments to us directly, our email is thebraincorepodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram @thebraincorepodcast and on Twitter @thebraincorepod. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we always appreciate a rating or a comment. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you are having a great brain day.